go.
Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Be honest, I'm not feeling my best. You know, it's one thing to know a word and another thing to understand what a word means. Today's Friday on the Front Porch Word for Bob is diuretic. It ain't fun. But, you know what? We're going to try. I don't know. We may play a lot of music tonight. Let's just put it that way. But I'm going to get through 3 hours of radio, one way or the other, okay? No, part of the, the doc wanted it, so I'm going to do it, and drinking fluids and losing fluids and taking fluids off, and that's about all we need to know about the diuretics for now, right?
Right.
Big thank you to Don. Just got the first contribution in this that we've seen in 4 days. Thank you very kindly. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. I just want to get this part out of the way. Headonradionetwork.com. There's a tab contribute. The snail mail address is there. The PayPal button is there. And, well, there won't be any show for Friday and Saturday. So, you know, we're just trying to keep up with the bills. Not the Joneses, the bills. And your help is how we manage to do that. So thank you very kindly. I talked to Boss Man Wayne today, who is feeling quite well, by the way. Thank you very much. Boss Man Wayne had some surgery not too long back, but he says he's feeling pretty chipper. And I inquired of him as to whether he had seen the matching funds come in for... the $100 snail mail challenge of a couple of weeks ago, and he did confirm that all but one of the ones I told him to watch for were there. I heard later, so it's all there. One last one on the way. So thank you very much for standing up and meeting the snail mail challenge. It's much appreciated. Now, like I said, I'm not feeling my best. It's Friday on the front porch, you know, pull up a chair. Just got a message on Facebook a little bit ago. It was kind of nice. Pulling up the rocker and getting ready to set a spell. That's how it works. You come on up on the front porch. It's a lovely late summer, on the way to autumn afternoon here in the last vestiges of almost level West Virginia. The blasting, there's not a lot of blasting dust in the air to make for a spectacular sunset, but you know what? Into each life some dust must fall. Rain, sorry. Pull up a chair, sit, cuss, discuss. Get a virtual swig out of the virtual jug with the virtual corn cob stopper in it, or maybe a virtual glass of sweet tea, or a virtual glass of lemonade, or in my case, grape juice. That's not virtual. See above. But, I haven't been feeling real good. Agnes still feels like dirt with whatever that bug. You know, the school year starts, and, you know, all summer long, everybody's healthy, happy, healthy, happy, healthy, happy, healthy. School starts, and it's like you just dip your children in a viral cesspool and say, bring home whatever sticks, honey. And it has landed on Agnes with a vengeance, and it landed on me, too. Although I think I weathered that a little bit better, save for the fact that, you know, see above. So anyway, not feeling so great. Friday on the front porch is an opportunity to be a little frivolous. To not be so doggone serious. And Lord God, Billy Bob, those last two nights we have been nothing if not serious. Whew. I mean, I got off the air last night, crawled into bed, and just... I think I had dreams about last night's show. And we will have continued discussions about how one responds to the fact that the president is not all that we would like for him to be, and how we get him to try, maybe, how we exert influence. I am utterly convinced, that my leave his name blank in the primary, it's important that you go vote in your primary, but leave his name blank, I'm convinced that that is a very, very, very good way to sort of, oh, Mr. President, we're over here. Certainly better than sitting around waiting for a favorite son or a third-party candidate or, you know, a pony or a unicorn. So, yeah, it's been quite serious. So I'm feeling a little frivolous today. And lucky for me, last night in the Congress of the United States, up around the Speaker's chair, they were feeling a little frivolous too. I used to play a lot of golf. About the best it ever got was, back in my early 20s. I had an overnight radio gig, and I'd get off work at 6 o'clock. That means I'd be out of the station by 6:30. And I kept my clubs in the back of the car, and I'd stop at the local public golf course. Sorry, no country clubs for us. But I'd stop at the local local public golf course down by the river bottoms in Alabama. And I would first go and hit a bucket of balls, and then I would play anywhere from 18 to 36 holes. And I did that practically 7 days a week. And, you know, just by dint of repetition, certainly not talent, you can lower your score doing that. And I did. I think by the end of the summer I was shooting somewhere around maybe 77, 78. It's nice. It was fun. Golf is a wonderful game. It's not the elitist game that... Come on. Would the Scots ever invent an elitist game? I mean, you're hitting a ball with a stick over in the fields where the sheep are grazing, and trying to stay out of the hollows that they form, where they stand against the hill to stay out of the wind? No, it's not an elitist game. Especially not if you've ever seen some drunken plaid. I was killing them today. And golfers, please understand, there's a point to this. This is not just talking about sports to be talking about sports. I'm not good enough at that particular subject to do my own show on it. But golf is a sport, and it's a popular American sport, and sport, as we have said in the past, is our American metaphor. It's our frame of reference. And so, golfers in particular will talk about golf anywhere. I mean, anywhere. Hey, Fred, how you doing? Oh, pretty good, Bill. Yeah, hitting them low and hard like you live? Ho, 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 sure am. Golfers will talk about golf anywhere. Restroom, elevator, restaurant, boardroom. Yeah, it's another one of those things that we as liberals and progressives miss out on because we've got this sort of snobbery that we hang on to. Oh, yeah, that's what they do. You know, those redneck people, they watch football. We're above that. Turn on the ice skating, or perhaps the ballet. Now, that's uplifting. See, he just uplifted her. That little skinny girl, he uplifted her plumb through the roof. Oh, we misjudged her. Must have lost her in the sun. But we do. And it's a fact. But golfers will talk about golf anywhere. And there's probably a greater profusion of golf jokes than any other sport. One of my favorite has to do with a guy standing at the pearly gates, a priest. St. Peter's going over the records and says, Father, I see here that on the 19th of May, you took the Lord's name in vain. And the priest says, oh, St. Peter, I can explain. Well, all right, go ahead. He said, well, the second hole was a long dogleg right, and I hit the ball. And I mean, I snap-hooked it right into the woods. Well, Father, was that when you took the Lord's name in vain? No, because I got out my sand wedge, and I flattened the face and hit it and got a nice spin on it, popped it out, actually shortened the hole, and I got up and down with birdie. Well, that's pretty nice, says St. Peter. So that's not when you took the Lord's name in vain? No. Well, what happened? He said, well, I finished the front nine at 4 under par, best I've ever played. And then on the 12th hole, on a par 3, I left the ball just inside the hazard. Oh, that's when you took the 4 under and it's getting ready. Oh, I understand, this is St. Peter. No. I got down there and I got it up out of the muck. It made a terrible splash. But I got up and down for par. And so it goes on like this. And well, is that when you took the Lord's name? No. And he says, so there we are. 18th hole. par 5. I'm there in 2. Says the priest. I'm there in 2, I'm laying 2, and the ball is 2 feet from the cup. And St. Peter, who's heard all this, just looks down at the priest and says, don't tell me you missed a goddamn putt. Golf chicks. There's a purpose behind all of this, actually. Because it entered into our public consciousness last night, very many thanks to a poster by the name of David over at Crooks and Liars. I don't think this is Dave Nywert. As he notes in his post, there's not a gotcha newsworthy disclosure in this open mic video. Because what it is it's audio that apparently John Boehner didn't know was happening. When he was just passing some idle banter back and forth with Vice President Joe Biden, it immediately reminded me of this.
Did you see that?
Miracle, eh?
Nice shot, Bishop. You must have made a deal with the devil.
Yeah, I could fake the club record, theoretically.
You better come in until this blows over.
What do you think, huh? I keep playing. I don't think the heavy ship's going to come down for quite a while.
You're right. Anyway, the good Lord would never disrupt the best game of my life!
Of course, the classic scene from Caddyshack. But that's not... No. Last night it was... It was John Boehner and Vice President Joe Biden. This is worth listening to. It really is. Again, as the poster at Crooks and Liars notes, not because of anything gotcha, but if anything, it shows where John Boehner's mind is.
Hey, I'm one of those barbarians.
You are. Let's look at the date, man. What's the date?
How are you?
How are you, pal?
I'm all right.
Man, we got that, a heck of a lot
I
of work,
man. Golf in August. And I was at a Dismal River Golf Club out in Sandville, Nebraska. You know, it's the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's one of the hardest square golf courses you ever want to see. Sandville, Sandville, yeah. Dismal. Seven birdies, five bogeys. I shoot 200. So we have lunch, sitting around for about an hour, and I thought, hey, why don't we go play nine holes? Six pars, three birdies, and I missed a 4-foot straight in birdie on the last hole.
Whoa!
Oh, so the next day I go to Sand Hills, I shoot 86.
I cannot go to Holy Ashton State.
Oh,
I have just.
One day I play great, next day I play awful. But this is the round of the decade. I've been doing this.
That's incredible.
12 years. I shot 67 one time down.
I survived.
Hey, I'm one of those barbarians.
Next day I went back and shot an 86. You know what? I mean, I'm not going to have a full-on hissy over that. Interestingly, Jim shooting in a note real quick. Oddly enough, I've heard some folks call on God more on the links than in church. And, so have I. I've also heard them frequently call down his damnation. See the joke above. You know, he doesn't really like Joe Biden. But Joe Biden is a genial soul that it's hard not to like. Hey, buddy. Hey, pal. Yeah, how you doing? You know. Scranton, right? You know, Scranton. Hey, what's up? No, Betsy, I don't know the joke about the rabbi who golfs on Yom Kippur. Oh, do please tell me. It's the kind of band, you know, because they can't just sit there and stand there and stare daggers at each other. And by that time, Boehner was probably half in the bag anyway, right?
Boehner's always in the bag, Bob.
That he is, dear. That he is. Starting with the Merlot on the cornflakes at about 7 a.m. But, and you know, drunks love to talk. Got me a new driver. Superior Mashie Niblick. And so, what happens is they got to stand there, and they got to talk about something. So they get past the, you barbarian, you, yeah, I'm a barbarian, but where's the gate? And it immediately, you know, because golf's easy. I once read a writer who said that if Willie Nelson and Richard Nixon, as two disparate individuals as you could possibly imagine, but both of them golfers and golf lovers, if those two played golf together by the third hole, oh, nice shot, hey, look at that. Yeah, you too, Mr. President. But there's also something going on here. They're disconnected. They really are. And particularly, I don't think Joe Biden is. But John Boehner is truly disconnected from the world outside the weird little bubble that Repiglicans live in. Truly. Yes, dear.
Which, by the way, Susan has an excellent link to a flash mob with barbarians at the gate. It's awesome.
That's the flash mob that visited Marcus Bachmann's office. So there's that, and they are disconnected. They can't help but be. It's not the same America that we live in. I had an email earlier today, President Not Sure had his speech last night, and it's getting decent reviews, actually. If we assume for a minute that it has a rat's chance in hell of ever going through. Which it doesn't. But, at any rate, also last night was the opening of the NFL season. And I had a great note from our buddy Dr. John, up in New York, where the floodwaters, I hope they're beginning to recede. But John tried to take a moment last night to just sort of put it all, just push it all back for a little bit and enjoy a little bit of football. John, Dr. John, you see, is a Green Bay Packers fan. And last night it was the Packers and the Saints. Diaper David Vitter, senator from Louisiana, was downright pissed off at President Not Sure for having the temerity to talk during football because, now I'll have to miss my own NFL party. So John writes in, and he says, I was so, so happy to be able to kick back and watch my Packers play a hell of a game against a good Saints squad last night. A great opener all around. The Pack won. And when Randall Cobb, and if you haven't seen the video of this, it is quite amazing. And when Randall Cobb made that incredible touchdown return, 108 yards, by the way, where he was spun around and over, kept his feet, and tied an NFL record in his first pro game ever. Well, says Dr. John, I was tickled beyond belief. That's a two count, that silence you just heard there. John says, and then this, and it's a quote from the news story about the game last night. Quote, Cobb went against Coach Mike McCarthy's orders by returning a kick from that deep in his own end zone, but he claimed to receive divine instruction. I was just trusting in God, Cobb told USA Today. He told me to bring it out. I'm not supposed to bring that out. Some things are logical and some things are just the power of God. This did not sit well with Dr. John, Horn staff archaeologist. A little tip, Randall. In this case, it worked for you. You are a professional athlete. Highly trained and conditioned. I'll even add in talented. And just as important, you got crucial blocks from your teammates. How about a little shout out for Jordy Nelson? And then there's this. If it hadn't worked out so good, let's say you slipped in the end zone, made it to the two, and then got flattened, I'm willing to bet you wouldn't have said you were listening to God who wanted you to make a really short return. He does work in mysterious ways, you know. And please, Randall, in general, it's a good idea to listen to your damn coach. And if you choose not to, keep your damn mouth shut. I just want to thank God for making me fumble there on my own one-yard line and allow the opposing team to pick up the ball in the end zone and fall on it and score and beat us by a touchdown, that very touchdown. I just want to praise you, Jesus. I want to praise you for making me fumble that way. Praise. I mean, we kid, but we're not kidding. And whether you realize it or not, this is another one of those places where the religion industry has injected itself into our public life. Football has nothing to do with Jesus or God. Neither does golf. Or curling. Or bocce ball, whatever. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. But because the religion industry is so intent on owning every blessed thing that touches this country, they have managed to insinuate themselves in and pollute some of the most enjoyable things remaining in America today. I mean, honest to Pete, even if you're a religious fundamentalist, isn't it a little bit embarrassing to see a Randall Cobb? I just want to thank Jesus for telling me to go against my coach's teaching and his orders and run it there out of the... And I just want to thank Jeebus. You know, he's a rookie, really. Jordy Nelson should take him into a corner and just kind of slap him in the helmet and go, yeah, because that block didn't help, did it? It was all Jesus, wasn't it? Well, Jesus gave you the power to block. Shut up! So, this Sunday there will be, speaking of the religion industry, this Sunday there will be a memorial service, the official ceremony at Ground Zero for the 10th anniversary of the attacks of September 11th, 2001 that were occasioned by the gross, willful, wanton negligence and bad faith of the Bush administration. Did you see the story that came out? I got it on Raw Story earlier today. Even the United States Air Force knew that Cheney was a dangerous dick. They knew it on September 11th. Raw Story writing yesterday, newly published audio this week reveals that Vice President Dick Cheney's infamous September 11, 2001 order to shoot down rogue civilian aircraft was ignored by military officials. Instead, the Air Force ordered pilots to only identify suspect aircraft. Cheney gave the shoot down order at about 10:15 a.m., according to his Memoirs of the Undead. But the September 11th commission report shows that United Flight 93 went down at 10:06 a.m. The story notes, had the military followed Cheney's order, civilian aircraft scrambling to get out of the sky could have been shot down, exponentially amplifying the day's tragedy. The situation was so chaotic, military officials received the exact location of one of the aircraft that hit the World Trade Center towers just 9 minutes before impact. Of course, there are still people out there who don't believe that those were really, really airplanes. Most striking of all is the revelation that an order by Vice President Dick Cheney was ignored by the military, which saw his order to shoot down aircraft as outside the chain of command. Instead of acknowledging the order to shoot down civilian aircraft and carrying it out, NORAD ordered fighters to confirm aircraft tail numbers first and report back for further instruction. The article describes the day as being one in which the White House was encased in bedlam and chaos. It occurred to me that that's a pretty accurate description of the entire Bush administration. But anyway, going backwards for just a minute, so there will be an official commemoration, an official memorial service on September 11, 2001, at the site of the World Trade Center, where they fell. And Mayor Michael Bloomberg is not turning it into a religious frenzy. There are no clergy members as speakers at the ceremony. None. You know who's not? You know who's not throwing a fit? The Episcopals aren't throwing a fit. The Lutherans aren't throwing a fit. The Catholics aren't throwing a fit. The Jews aren't throwing a fit. The Muslims aren't throwing a fit. The Buddhists aren't throwing a fit. The Jainists aren't throwing a fit. The Animists are not throwing a fit. The Coptics aren't throwing a fit. Who's throwing a fit? The Southern Baptists are throwing a fit. Via their mouthpiece, Dick Land. Reverend Dick Land, who is president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. He said not having religion industry figures there on Sunday only proves that New York is the epicenter of secularism, and it's out of step with the rest of America. Jesus Christ, you're kidding me. On September 11th, 2011, or the days leading up thereto, one of the highest-ranking figures in the Southern Baptist Convention in the United States is trying to sow seeds of discord because his church isn't being paid enough attention. "We're not France," he said. "Mr. Bloomberg is pretending we're a secular society, and we are not." Congressman Randy Forbes, who is, of course, a Republican, he's from Virginia, which ain't in New York. He's a co-chairman of the Congressional Prayer Caucus. And he done sent Mr. Bloomberg, Mayor Bloomberg, a letter on behalf of the caucus members urging him to include prayer in the ceremony. It's 10 years later, and these miserable, rotten, foul, disgusting, misbegotten, the misanthropic monsters are still trying to figure out a way to capitalize on the most horrible day that exists in our current cultural memory. That right there would be enough, if I wasn't gone already, to send me taking a hike out of the Southern Baptist Church. Trying to hijack. And that's what it is. The Southern Baptist Convention is trying to hijack a solemn moment of memento mori in order to advance their weird, twisted, deviant view of religion. God damn them. God damn Dick Land. Am I off base? I don't think so. But it's, there is, really, despite John Boehner only being able to think of golf, and despite the obsession that Dick Land has with praying at praying to his Jeebus. When they fell from the buildings, did they know my Jeebus? There really is an America out there far beyond these narrowed, weird interests. If the outcome of this particular story hadn't been so horrific, it would have been, you would have titled it, "See, there was a reason Barney Fife had to keep his bullet in his pocket." The story comes, of course, from East Dublin, Georgia. East Dublin, Georgia has a police department. East Dublin, Georgia Police Department has an officer by the name of Jeffrey Deal. Jeffrey Deal is what you would call a police officer in name only. Because he has not received certification as an officer, Jeffrey Deal is not authorized to carry a gun, and he has no authority to actually make an arrest. But that's okay. It didn't bother the East Dublin, Georgia Police Department, either of those. It's been more than 2 years that he hasn't had those powers, Officer Deal. That's okay. They turned him loose in a roller. They let him go with a cruiser. And a gun! And there's a video of a day in the life of Jeffrey Deal and a fellow by the name of Melvin Williams. Jeffrey Deal went after Melvin Williams because he said he ran a stop sign. So Jeffrey Deal trailed him down to a house. There's video of it. The story's over at alternet.org. Georgia cop. Well, I'll tell you in a minute. The East Dublin, Georgia Police Department has no written policy on the use of deadly force, i.e. firearms. No standard operating procedure manual at all for how to conduct a traffic stop. But it did, at least mercifully, have a camera pointed out the windshield of Officer Deal's cruiser. There's not a lot to it, but there's a little bit. Just mainly Officer Deal driving along, turning, backing up a little bit, going down a road, coming to a stop sign, which he too rolls through, by the way, just in case you're keeping score. Blew right through it, goes down the road a little ways there in East Dublin, Georgia, comes to a wide spot in the side of the road, and the music is apparently coming from a house or a car. Yeah, right. I just shot one, 10-18. Melvin Williams was in his automobile. Officer Deal goes running out of the car. Get back in the car! Get back in the car! You can hear it, but it's kind of muffled. And was frankly terrorizing Mr. Williams. And then shot him. And killed him. Georgia cop who shot and killed man who supposedly ran through a stop sign didn't even have power of arrest. That's the headline at alternet.org. This is sickening. Melvin Williams hollers, "What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?" until he's out of the car, and he pushes Williams back and blows him away. And then he gets on the radio, and this was the one that kind of grabbed me. I'm sure it did you too. I shot one. One what? One what, Officer Deal? One what? I shot one. There is no evidence that he ever called on the radio for medical attention. This is the America that exists while John Boehner blathers on and palavers on. About golf. This is what happens. And that is particularly, I would suggest, a sobering reminder of the America we do live in. It's not one of country clubs where John Bo- and you know what? I missed a 2-foot straight in putt. I shot one! Shot one! 10-18. Who even knows if he got the 10 code right? The guy had never been authorized to carry a weapon or make an arrest. But that doesn't matter in East Dublin, Georgia. I shot one! At least there weren't people there with picnic baskets. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
This little song that I'm singing about, people, you all know it's true. If you black and got a word for a living now, this is what they will say to you. They say, if you's white, she's all right. If you's brown, stick around. But if you's black, oh, brother, get back, get back, get back. I was in a place one night, they was all having fun. They was all buying beer and wine, but they would not sell me none. They said, if you was white, she's all right. If you was brown, you could stick around. But as you black, brother, get back, get back, get back. I went to an employment office. I got a number and I got in line. They called everybody's number, but they never did call mine. They said, if you's white, you's all right. If you's brown, you could stick around. But as you black, brother, get back, get back, get back. Me and a man was working side by side. Now this is what it meant. They was paying him $1 an hour, and they was paying me 50 cents. They said, if you was white, you'd be all right. If you was brown, you could stick around. But as you black, oh brother, get back, get back, get back. I opened 3 victories with my plowing hoe. Now I want you to tell me, brother, what you gonna do about the old Jim Crow. Now, if you's white, she's all right. If you's brown, stick around. But if you black, Oh, brother, get back, get back, get back.
Far cry that from, say, the Get Back of the Beatles. Much, much more intense. That came our way via David in Tennessee, our my head writer, spiritual advisor, and musical advisor as well. And it sort of dovetails with the fact that, you know, we've been talking about America going in retrograde motion, you know, going backwards, retrograde motion, going backwards, not forward, or at least a certain portion of America. In that article I referenced over at Truth Out called Goodbye to All That, it mentions the modern Republican Party being roughly the same as the Democratic Party of John C. Calhoun before the Civil War. And so it was that I got a note from David in Tennessee. By the way, well, you'll know, you'll understand. I got a note from David in Tennessee. He says, in 1960, Riches of Atlanta opened a branch of their wondrous department store in Knoxville, Tennessee. Those of us that saw Knoxville as a provincial backwater all too proud of its flinty Scots-Irish origin reveled in the breath of fresh air that it was a department store coming to us from a cooler city. In mid-1962, the record department of Riches beckoned. I'd begun to pull on the thread of American music called the blues. With every available $3.98, I would tug as best I could. While reaching in my pocket for the cash, a very well-turned-out young man at the register sniffed, "Oh, why buy that? The recording's old and sounds horrible. Besides, the latest New Christie Minstrels is in. Get that." I eschewed the suggestion and paid for my Big Bill Brunzy LP. That was Get Back, Big Bill Brunzy. As we, David notes, as we of a progressive bent played and discussed folk and blues and message music, we felt we were making a difference. Yeah, I know, sweet youth, ain't it grand? A few of us marched a bit, maybe even chanting. Politely, by real activist standards, but we did chant. The 60s and all that they held played out for folks like me that were 14 at the onset and 24 once that decade ended. We saw the assassinations, the hope realized and dashed, the blatant stupidity of the powerful as they propped up profit machinery and, yes, hard-won advancement. By the 1970s, we thought we'd seen the end of the need for the message music we'd rallied around. We had laws on our side. We had public opinion on our side. Hell, if a white guy took a black woman to a football game at Neyland Stadium, maybe he heard a few nigger-lover catcalls, but he wouldn't be jumped by the defenders of Southern tradition. Progress was ours, or so we thought. Now, 40 years later, we need action and music and messages and noise about our times as much as ever before. Things I never thought I'd see again are rife across the nation. And let me say plainly and firmly, my northern extended family, it's no fucking easier for a black man without a driver's license to vote in Ohio than it is for a man to vote in South Carolina. Don't y'all even think about giving me that it's a southern problem bullshit. Just do not go there. Between voter suppression, crooked machines, and gerrymandering, voters that are not white and middle class and historically Republican are flat screwed. Location doesn't matter. Full voter access and one man, one vote have been, are now, and will continue to be under assault as much as in the Jim Crow era. Thus, I offer Get Back. Big Bill Brunzy did his version of this ever-evolving song in the mid-40s. It did not enhance his career. Bill held a day job his entire, albeit much too short, life. But I'm here to say that after thinking in 1971 that times had moved beyond the song, such is not the case. The America described herein is as much the case today as it was in 1945, and every Republican wants more, much more, of their wicked dominance over this nation. If you're one of theirs, you never have enough. If you're not one of theirs, you'll never be able to give them enough. And epilogue. Over the years, my vinyl, as well as other formats, sickness, has resulted in something like owning 4,000 titles. Try as I might, I never got around to buying that first New Christie Minstrels recording. Funny thing, that. Somehow I don't think David is the lesser for it. But nonetheless, far be it from me to see David deprived.
I'll tell you a story all about John Luther Willard Jones's pride and joy. How he come down here from Casey Town, he was a Tennessee mountain boy. The Lord alone was simply lined out the cabin on the Memphis cannon board. And he was a just what monkey is best, and you could hear his fireman call. Casey Jones, Casey Jones.
Yeah, that's enough of that. You tell me, Big Bill Brunzi, Casey Jones. Yeah, you know what? I'll take Big Bill Brunzi, too. Email rolling in. Our buddy Corey from the Free State of Louisville. He says, the ironic part about Mr. Cobb... He says, the ironic part, teammate to the player who blamed his invisible friend for dropping a TD pass last year in Buffalo. Maybe it's an SEC thing. Hashtag keep WVU in the Big East. By the way, says Corey, I'm not in a real good place having Randall Cobb on the Packers. I'm a Packers fan, but he attended Lexington Basketball Academy, hated rivals of the University of Louisville Fighting Cardinals. I have to cheer for that guy who burned us on a couple of occasions over the last 4 years. Speaking of which, I will be leaving at about 7 p.m. for a rather important football game. Forgiveness. Absolution is granted, Corey. I understand. Also, Isaac, you've got that right. Big Bill Brunzi. And get back. David in Tennessee noting, he says, applause for Bloomberg. Look, Bob, there would need to be about 30 religions represented at that ceremony, if any were allowed. Those 3,000 covered every faith on earth. Diversity at its finest, says I. Additionally, there were probably more Muslims killed that day than there were Southern Baptists. Take that, Dickland. And, you know, I got to give Mayor Bloomberg some credit for this, for some common sense, because David's not kidding. That memorial, sir, that memorial would be nothing but praying. Because the inclusion of one mandates the inclusion of all. If you're going to pray to Jesus, you pretty much got to pray to Shiva. Or Krishna. Or Ganesh. Or Allah, or Yahweh, or any number of other invisible friends and various deities. How hard is that to figure out? Andy with a note. Representative Boehner and Vice President Biden clip. You said it, eye-opening, even tragic. Representative John Boehner lives in a different world than us. There's no way he can represent us or have any clue what daily life is for the unkempt masses. The focus of Representative Boehner's life is looking forward to his next golf game. That's his being. Nothing else penetrates his quest for hedonism on the golf course. He really gets off on golf. As long as his rich backers and corporations keep him on the golf course, life is wonderful. Just wonderful for all. Yeah, the rolling loop, thank you, Andy, the rolling loop soundtrack of John Boehner's world is Bobby McFerrin singing Don't Worry, Be Happy. And really, why shouldn't John Boehner be happy? His side is clearly winning. remember that bumper sticker, that if we just had a little bit of time and, I don't know, a little more of other stuff, that bumper sticker, they want it all. They want it all. And it's not a joke. It is the God's honest and unfly-blown truth. They want it all. So, I suppose, like I said, there may be a lot of music in the show tonight. I suppose we'll take a little break and come back with your calls. You know the number. It's Friday on the Front Porch, after all. This is enough with the filibuster already. We'll take a break and come back. Your calls. And more. Your emails, bobkincaid@gmail.com is the number. There is the email address. See, like I said, on drugs. bobkincaid@gmail.com is the email address. The number is 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. We can always, well, the only way we exist is by your kind, continued support. If a few of you would like to hit the PayPal button, it would be much, much appreciated. So we'll be right back. This is The Horn.
Listening to a radio station where the mighty hosts of the heavens sing. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
If you want to feel those good vibrations coming from the joy that his love can bring, turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Cool Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Cool Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends!
And hippies!
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Cool Genius. We got your soap right here.
And got their bath and body stuff!
www.doublegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy. You know, I knew, as kind of lousy and rotten as I was feeling, I knew that if I got behind the microphone, I would feel better, and I do. And I thank you all for it. No miracles here. No miracles at all. It's just a matter of the good energy that happens whenever we're live together and chatting in the chat room, talking on the phone, emailing, that sort of thing. Just knowing all the good energy that is out there has picked me up considerably, and that's not a joke. It also has nothing to do with any invisible friends, but I'm just saying. By the way, Jude sent a note along. Of course, I told, you know, after the bad golf joke and all, right, the John Boner there, you know, all he could talk about was his golf game. Jude sent along a link, a petition calling on John Boner to focus on jobs and not golf. If you want to sign that, you can, you know, as Jude notes, one person at a time. We can make change. And the website is Courage Campaign, couragecampaign.org/jobsnotgolf, JOBSNOTGOLF, couragecampaign.org, jobsnotgolf. Thank you very much, Jude, for sending that along. So, above all, let's go to the phones. It is, after all, Friday on the front porch. Let's pass the jug. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Cassie.
Well, hey, Cassie.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How about you?
I'm good. I think I have a major.
Really?
I think so. You're going to like it.
Okay, goody. I can't wait.
It's new. It's an interdisciplinary major. It's called Human Values.
Ooh, I like that a bunch.
It's a little bit of everything, but it's philosophy and law and ethics and, you know, it's like, gotta do some literature, take a little math out of the way, but it's, it's human values, and it's everything I want to do.
That is that would, if were I in the same situation you are, I would be. I don't know how you. Well, I couldn't walk past it, because that touches on everything that matters about being a human, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And, you know, and includes, you'll be glad to know, some things about not just human values, but Earth values.
Well, it does happen to be where we live, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
We haven't opened up that next planet yet, so until... Yeah, by definition, it kind of has to.
But it's, you know, it's Earth values, it's not environmentalism. I mean, it's all in terms of values. It's the coolest thing. It's like...
Is it brand new, or, I mean, will you be one of the first to graduate with it, or...?
I will be the second year that graduates with it.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's a very, I mean, and it sounds to me like it's going to be a very, very broad liberal arts base, which is kind of what the point was in the first place, isn't it?
Yes.
So things are going well, I trust?
Things are going really well. Going back to Austin for over a week. And I went back to Austin in time to help people, you know, pack all their belongings into their cars, because they didn't know if they were going to have to leave ahead of a fire and all that, to come back up here where... This is opening weekend for the, so we have this whole welcome thing for the freshmen, and all, like, there's all kinds of stuff going on.
Oh, so they're just getting started?
Yeah, we start so late. We're just getting started. But everything is delayed and moved by rain, and, you know, like, it's going from one extreme to another. And it's been, you know, it's not like, I don't know, when I hear people talk about climate change, and they talk about, you know, oh, well, there's always been, you know, extremes in weather, and there's always been stuff. Well, if part of the country is having the wettest summer on record ever, and another part of the country is having the driest and hottest summer on record ever, this is not just, it's raining over there and it's dry over here and it'll all change next week. This is like permanent, complete climate change. This is not, you know, weather. I'm so tired of hearing people say that it's, you know, it's not real because there's, you know.
Well, the first thing you're dealing with among
the... It's hot in Texas. It's bizarre. Well, no, it's...
No, there's a new report out. Texas just had the hottest summer in its on record. The average temperature was 86 degrees.
Yeah, well, but I mean, from what I heard from when I was down there and from people, the average temperature was closer to 100 if you...
Well, no, that's what I'm... But, I mean, no, that's the average temperature. That's if you take the nighttime low and add it to the daytime high.
Right.
The average temperature, that's hot.
Yes. But it's not just the hottest Texas summer ever. It's the hottest summer ever anywhere in the U.S., I think. And driest.
And it's been like that summer after summer after summer. But the problem you're dealing with is the manifest ignorance of a wide swath of people. I had that statistic the other night that just sort of made my eyes roll back in my head. Of Democrats, okay, of Democrats, I think only, what, 28%, maybe less, maybe 24% got the question right, what percentage of scientists think global warming is real? Of Democrats in this survey, Cassie,
94.
Well, the answer is 98% of scientists, but
okay,
it was category.
So 97 or 99? Do I get right? I mean,
how close? No. But the way that it was, you know, it was a survey. It's multiple choice and everything. And the right answer was between 81% and 99%.
Oh, so I was right.
Yeah, but only 24% of Democrats answering the question said that.
I'm so disappointed in Democrats. Honestly, I mean, I read about Democrats and over history, and it's they're Democrats. Like, I'm so, Democrats now are not. I want to go back in time.
To when they weren't stupid?
Yeah.
Or infested?
In corporate and just...
Or maybe...
I did this Young Democrats thing last year. I kind of did a little bit of Young Democrat stuff when I was in high school. And that's where I met the crazy guy that I went out with my junior year and whatever, anyway. But I did some Young Democrat stuff up here last year. I don't want anything to do with the Democrats. Like, it was, they're just as bad as, I mean, they're not as bad as Republicans back home, but they're just as bad as Republicans here.
They're just icky?
Republicans back home are a whole special breed.
Well, now, was this a campus Young Democrats group, Cassie?
Yes.
Well, see, you're at Princeton.
Yeah.
The Young Republicans and the Young Democrats are going to be differentiated only to the degree that one drives Mercedes and the other drives BMW. Or Daddy does, in large part.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's a broad generalization.
That's pretty general. But it's just, I'm amazed at how many people either don't know anything politically, don't care about anything politically, or think that, you know, you tell somebody that you're a Democrat or you're involved politically or whatever, and, like, they expect you to, you know, stop bathing and, you know...
Grooming.
You know, they expect that what you really just told them is that you're a communist, you know, or a hippie communist. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, I think I need to start my own party.
Or if you said I want to go back in time, Cassie, let me suggest that you go forward into the future, because that's really what you're doing. And you are the person who is committed, and you are the person who has dreams.
If I want to be a Democrat, that.
No, you go change it. You go fix it. You have the power. I'm not being smart.
You're talking to a bunch of morons.
Right, but there's a difference, and I know you know this. Ignorance is curable.
Right.
Stupidity is not.
Right.
And where you find where you find ignorance, Cassie, you can work to cure it. And that's how you make a better Democratic Party.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm never going to suggest that you go off and join, you know, some third party group or whatever. I'm going to vote for a Mountain Party candidate in the West Virginia governor's election here in about 3 weeks. But by and large, third parties just don't work in this country. That's why Ron Paul is a Republican and not the libertarian he really is. You know what I mean?
So who's worse? My Texas governor or my New Jersey governor? Because honestly, I had no idea
I'll tell you truthfully, the governor of Texas. And it's something that America doesn't know. You probably do.
He's a mean asshole.
Yeah, he is that. But he also has relatively little power as governors go. You know, the Texas legislature only meets once every 2 years.
Yeah.
And the governor is relatively powerless.
It's 4 months every 2 years.
Yeah. But the governor of Texas is one of the weaker governors organizationally in the United States. I would say that Chris Christie is more dangerous. Because, I mean, look what we know now, thanks to Brad Friedman. Look what we know he did. He had a secret meeting with one of the Koch brothers immediately before pulling out of pulling New Jersey out of the anti-greenhouse gas multi-state compact.
Right. Right.
And I think he is far more dangerous. Because among other things, every now and then he says something that isn't unutterably stupid.
But he doesn't kill people.
Doesn't New Jersey have the death penalty?
I don't believe
he just
so.
Doesn't do it with quite the joyous abandon that Texas does.
Yeah. It's a religion in Texas.
Yeah, it really is. I mean,
it's a religion. I mean, they, you know, they, it's like, you know, the God, guns, and gays thing. I mean, the guns are guns, but the guns are also death penalty. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I mean, the evidence is there. Rick Perry, as noted last night, Rick Perry ordered the death of an innocent man. He really, really did that.
Yes.
The guy did not burn his daughters alive. He just didn't. But that didn't matter to Rick Perry, because killing folks on death row is a matter of religious frenzy in that state.
Yeah, that's why I said that the death penalty is a religion.
And you got to think
I thought it would be better up here.
Is it not?
In general, politically, no.
Wow.
It's not. It's, you know, people don't understand enough about our history. People don't understand enough about fairness and equality, and, you know, they don't understand enough about democracy. I mean, up here it's more about the pocketbook and not so much about religion, but it's not democracy either.
No. What you're finding out, I would suspect that maybe there probably was a little culture shock at first, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, there still is.
Oh.
I'm bouncing back and forth on an airplane last week, didn't help. But yeah.
But you did. You thought you were going to some liberal place.
Well, I mean, I knew Princeton was liberal. I mean, I knew it wasn't Brown, right? But I didn't know. I thought New Jersey. It's the Northeast. It's blue. Look at the map. But it's not. Nothing is.
Well, there's no state that's red and no state that's truly blue. You know, you can find good liberals in Alabama and good liberals in Texas and just drop dead stupid right-wing teabagger types in any state in the union.
Yeah.
But I think going forward, rather than being discouraged and saying, I don't want anything to do, you know, you're too smart. You're gonna be in a place where you have the right and the ability to stand up and say, no, it's this way.
I do.
And yeah, I know you do. And you will get the communication skills, Cassie, to make you able to not put people off when you do that. So that you won't just say, you're an idiot, you're wrong, let me explain to you why, let's do it my way. Because, you know, you know the old saying, you win more flies, you catch more flies with honey than with vinegar, right?
Yes.
Now, I might also suggest that you crank up a little tiny bit of that Texas accent when you... Now y'all, let's talk here. Yeah. So what kind of a class load are you carrying this semester?
I'm taking too many classes. I got 16 credits going. I may drop something. But it looks doable. It's almost all in the liberal arts. But I need to get some science out of the way, but I'm actually doing environmental science.
Oh, is that going to be your science credit?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, I still have one more after this.
Well, I have no doubt that you will spend at some point in time. You will mention the Appalachian apocalypse, and you will tell them what's going on down here.
Of course.
And if you need,
I already have.
Already have. Beautiful, beautiful.
I'll use it as a term paper.
No. Wow.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm gonna come to you professionally. Not just to edit, help me edit my stuff, but to, you know, edit my thoughts too.
Oh wow! Well, if you need anybody to come up there and enlighten them, by all means, just give me a call.
Oh, that'd be so cool.
Wouldn't it?
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yes, it would be.
You'd come to Princeton?
Oh heck yeah, I'd come to Princeton. Find your local Sierra Club chapter.
Okay. Is that who usually sponsors you?
No, not always. I mean, there's all kinds of different groups. Sometimes we've got their little Unitarian churches that invite us to come and talk about mountaintop removal, and we go all over for a variety of reasons.
I bet the Princeton Green Club could invite you.
Oh, that would be wonderful. That would be wonderful.
Okay.
Or even a screening of The Last Mountain would be really cool. Have you seen that yet?
I did. I saw it.
You did?
I did. Of course I did. Of course I did.
That's so cool. Maybe do a screening on campus.
Yeah. All right.
Uh-oh, you broke up a little bit.
I can't think about doing organized Democrat stuff
now,
but I could do that.
Well, that would be a nice replacement for it. It's certainly still activism.
Yes, and I'm still doing prison reform activism.
And you might be interested to know...
I think my entire life I will do prison reform activism. I think no matter what I end up doing as an adult, no matter, whatever, wherever I end up as a career... somewhere in my life, there will be prison activism going on. I can't believe how much people think.
Oh, I think you got to stop walking while you're talking, Cassie.
I'm not walking.
Your signal dropped out.
I said, can I swear? For a second.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So people think that prisoners are a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Just because they've been convicted of a crime. And I think my entire life I will have something in my life defends the dignity and personhood and human value of prisoners. No matter what else I end up doing. And it's, as you know, the cause that's closest to my heart.
Right.
How many people who consider themselves progressives or consider themselves liberals still don't care whether felons ever get the right to vote or, even after they're done serving their term or whether, people have food that's nutritious food and not anti-calorie food in prison. It's like, well, they're in prison. They deserve it,
They ain't supposed to be having fun. It's prison.
Right. And, up to and including that deserve to be raped. And they deserve, and it's like, some of these prisoners, they're somebody's mother. And let me tell you my story.
Right.
That's just what I say. My mother served 7.5 years.
Is she out?
Oh, yeah, she's been out. She's been out for a couple years.
Wow. Well, what you say there, Cassie, tells me that your heart has not changed, and that's a good thing. Your heart is still right and strong and good. Because you know how I am about religion and stuff, but I don't buy in. I don't buy into the miracles and the hooey and the whatnot. But that brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, he said, "Clothe the naked, house the homeless, feed the hungry, comfort the sick, and visit the people in prison."
Yes. And don't visit them to throw things at them and make them feel worse.
Right. I forget who I was talking to earlier today on Facebook or something, and I made the remark, because people like Ron Paul, the best thing we could do for the poor would be to get rid of the minimum wage. And I thought, it's a good thing that that guy had been beaten to death by the side of the road, got found by the Samaritan and not a libertarian, because he would have died.
Yeah.
What's that? Yeah, you've been beaten near to death and you're laying in a ditch? Well, pull yourself up by your own libertarian free-thinking bootstraps there, sir.
Yeah, but you know what, Buck? I'm going to go back to where I started. The Democrats would leave him by the side of the road, too.
Some. The corporatist ones would. But you got to be careful, Cassie, because something has happened in this country, and it's disturbing, and it helps the really evil people win. When we say that the Democrats and the Republicans are equally as bad one as another, we make it more likely that the really evil ones, i.e. the Republicans, will be the ones who have power. Because those are not, all Democrats are not as bad as Republicans. Oh, lost her. See, she kept dropping out. I knew that would happen. They're not all as bad. Are we going to say that Dennis Kucinich is equally as bad as any given Republican? I don't think so. We're going to say that Al Franken is equally as bad as any other Republican? Really? No, there's no way to equate the two. Is that you, Cassie?
It is.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't know what I did.
Well, you got to put one foot in the air, stick your tongue out, hold the other phone that's not holding the fan.
Now I can hear you twice.
Oh, that's no good. You've got a bad cell connection.
Radio part still on. Okay, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, now I can only hear you.
You only hear me once? Oh, we made it all better.
I heard you twice, 5 seconds apart. It was not good.
No, it'll make you crazy, that.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so you were saying that I know that the Dems are not as bad as Republicans, but what I'm saying is that organized Democrats are not what Democrats were supposed to be.
No, they're not. And that's a shift that began in the early 90s with the creation of the DLC. But the only way the Democratic Party is ever going to change back to its traditional roots is through people like you. And you've got, you being a young person, have the greatest to gain and the greatest ability to affect change, because you are working through a broader time window. It's possible the party could be turned around in my lifetime, but it is much more likely to be turned around in yours. So, that's all I'm suggesting there. Just to be careful that you don't tar with too broad a brush.
Yeah. I just got discouraged. I mean, I'm just discouraged. And I don't know. I wish that someone in American politics, besides Bernie Sanders, who's a socialist, I'm not a Democrat.
Right.
I wish that somebody in American politics would stand up for humans and human values.
Right. That's why it's been, that's why we, some of us in the struggle for human rights here in Appalachia have started pushing back when people call us environmentalists.
Right. Well, that's why I was telling you, Yeah, because it's not about the environment. It's about the earth. It's earth values and human values.
Yeah, because the people on the earth are part of a system totality. It is the view of humans that they exist somehow separate from nature that has led us to the problem we are in now.
Yeah.
Because if you see yourself as part of a cohesive whole, you can't destroy the thing that is supporting you. I've got the ongoing joke.
Bob, the problem is that we don't even care about humans. So it's the fact that, that people can belittle prisoners, or can belittle people with addictions, or people with mental illness, or people who are poor, or people who are unemployed, and marginalize everybody. It's not that we've separated the people from the earth or the people from the environment. It's that we've separated ourselves above everybody we think that we're above.
Yeah.
It's the problem is we don't even value each other.
Well, it's like I'm not touting myself or anything, But I, every time I send an email, I get a little reminder because I use a line from Kurt Vonnegut on my, for my signature line. And I think it's really, really telling and trenchant and worth sitting down and doing a little navel gazing over. A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. Isn't that the truth?
It is.
And the trick...
I think we've lost compassion. You know, I mean, what religion is supposed to do for us is not to tell us that our religion should be in the 9/11 commemoration instead of someone else's religion. What our religion is supposed to do for us is to give us that bit of conscience and compassion back so that we can feel something. We can... Empathy than compassion. I'm more empathy than conscience, but... You know, we'll take some conscience, too.
Well, yeah, and for those of us who are really, really skeptical about the invisible friends and things, conscience is what we have. And empathy, and yes, empathy as well. But moreover, you know, it's the totality of everything. It's the Wendy's dollar menu. It's who's going to be on Dancing with the Stars. It's whether the Red Sox are a half game back or 3.5 games back of the Yankees. It's everything that takes our focus away and keeps us from at least spending some marginal amount of time, Cassie, on contemplating the world of which we are part. Because from a religious basis, almost all religions at some point in time will tell you to consider that you are part of a whole. And that's one of the dangerous things about, for instance, dominionism, the dominionist cult inside Christianity. Because it says that human beings exist separate from the planet and can do to it as they wish, and that the planet, you know, Jesus will just fix it. And
aren't
that's...
Aren't we supposed to help?
Pardon?
Aren't we supposed to help along? I mean, how's Jesus going to come and fix it if we even care enough to keep it nice to begin with?
Well, there you go. It's the debate between stewardship and dominion. Are we here to take care of the planet, or are we here to just use it as we see fit and throw it away?
And I guess what I'm maintaining is that people are doing that about people too.
Right, because they
are we here to care for each other, or are we here to just use them and toss them?
And I think you know the rather sad answer.
I knew.
this phone call is taking place on a cell phone, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I read an article the other day, and it's not just iPhones. It's Motorola. It's HTC. It's everybody. The largest electronics firm in the world is a company called Foxconn. Okay? Foxconn. They got factories all over China. This is the company whose response to its workers committing suicide was not to try to stop to make things better so they wouldn't commit suicide, but was instead to put nets up outside the building to catch them. They make the Foxconn workers inside the Chinese factory that makes iPhones.
Yeah.
They make $1.89 an hour. And that's because they just got a 30% raise.
What does it cost to live there?
What does it cost to live there? All things being equal, they live in dormitories. They live in a dormitory with somebody who doesn't speak their dialect so that they can't organize. And they live in dormitories with someone who doesn't speak their dialect and works a different shift. So it's total isolation. You know, they eat in the company cafeteria. They go to they are allowed 10 minutes per day. They are allowed 10 minutes per 12-hour day for use of bathroom facilities. And
that's
so
horrible.
And so you know, I've made a conscious effort every time I pick up.
It sounds like prison labor.
It's slave labor. But you know what? When you go in to buy your shiny new Motorola, whatever, Apple, blah, 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 gizmo, all you're thinking about is, that is one cool gizmo. Something like $9.
Is there an American or is there a union, human rights aware company that makes and sells cell phones?
No. There are groups that monitor these companies. One of them's in Hong Kong. The story about this is at alternet.org. Apple's profit margin on the iPhone for the retailers is something like 60%. It costs about $9 to make an iPhone 4.
Okay.
So, out of the price, you know, the list price on the thing is...
For $200.
No, $500 if you buy them straight out without a plan.
Oh, I thought they were $200. Okay.
$500. Right.
And it cost them $9 to make.
Right.
So, okay, if they decided to treat their employees like humans and provide something like a reasonable work environment and reasonable wages, they could keep the pricing of the phone at exactly the same.
Right, but they are driven by Wall Street to constantly declare share dividends. So they might be able to go, they might have to go a quarter without declaring a dividend. And then Wall Street wouldn't like them anymore, and they wouldn't be fabulously profitable anymore, and the cult status that Apple occupies would begin to diminish. But again, it's not just Apple. It's all of them.
It's all of them. Well, okay, so when I was in high school, Bob, I had
Are you there? Did I lose you, Cassie? Cassie. I lost her. Darn. But the point is, we don't consider the stuff. We don't consider the impact that it has on our lives, because we are not labor oriented. This is a capital oriented society. Therefore we think about the money and not the people. Let's try again. Is that you, Cassie?
It is. I'm not doing anything.
No,
I haven't moved. I have not moved.
Just tell me. No, just tell me. Just tell me the service is AT&T, and everything we'll understand everything.
It is AT&T.
Yeah, because see, they could screw up a one car parade.
And they know we're talking about them. Okay, so when I was in high school, you used to have an advertiser on the horn that made tennis shoes and sweatshirts and T-shirts that were made with union labor.
Right, nosweatshop.com, I think, was the place.
Yes, and I had, I mean, they were not great tennis shoes, but I bought a pair of tennis shoes from you.
Mm-hmm.
Or from them. They were supposed to give you a dollar, and then they didn't give you the dollar.
Oh, yeah, we never saw a penny from them.
Right, but anyway. But back when they were supposed to give you a dollar if you bought tennis shoes, I bought a pair of tennis shoes. And I liked being able to tell people, oh yeah, these weren't made by some kid in China for 10 cents. This is, you know, this is no sweat. This is made without sweatshop labor. This is, you know, made by people who are earning decent wages. And that was a source of pride.
Yeah.
To have, I mean, they were not good shoes.
They were not.
And I hate that they didn't give you your dollar. But
oh, a lot of people bought stuff from them. We never saw a penny.
But the idea of it
is great.
And we need to, I mean, how many people could we convince to buy a cell phone? Excuse me, to buy a cell phone or to buy an iPod or whatever with it's $10 more, but the people who make it are treated like humans.
Well, look, I mean, there's a...
I know a lot of people who would pay a little extra for that.
Yeah, I would. And, you know, an organization like Credo, the mobile phone company Credo, I'm sure they'd jump on that phone in a heartbeat. But it requires somebody to manufacture it. And we have shipped everything, I mean everything, Cassie, to China.
Yeah.
It would probably, if you started, let's say you had the investment capital, and you started tomorrow, it would probably take you 5 years to get up and running to manufacture a smartphone in the United States. Now, maybe somebody's going to send me an email and go, Bob, there's an American-made smartphone, and I'll be wanting to see that.
But I'm not saying I have to build it in the United States. I'm just saying I have to build it somewhere where I treat people like humans.
Canada, maybe.
Even China, but, you know, some place where people have a, you know.
Well, here's the fun part of that whole horror, that whole human rights horror story about Foxconn. You know how they plan to remedy the fact that they treat people like crap, Cassie? They have just...
I'm going to guess. They're not going to let anybody photograph their factories.
No.
They're not going to let anybody talk to their workers.
No, they're going to put all of their workers out of work. They're going to can all of their workers. They have plans to replace all of their human labor with a 1 million robot workforce. So they won't be abusing people anymore. They'll just be kicking them out on the street to starve. Isn't that great?
So what's my alternative to a cell phone?
Stand outside and yell? Landline? It's 2011, Cassie. That's the thing. There is no alternative to a cell phone. To ask somebody just to have a phone in their office and their home and not be able to be reached at any moment of any given day, and to be separated from the Twitterverse and the Facebookverse and the text message verse, well, you might as well ask them to go live in a freaking cave.
Bob, do you remember when I had all of the problems with my brother when I was in high school, and I ended up leaving and everything ended up going up in smoke, and my sister-in-law cut off my phone service?
I do.
And I had a harder time with the fact that I didn't have a phone than I did with the fact that I didn't have a house and that I didn't have any clothes.
Like I said, you felt like you were living in a cave.
It was worse. It was like...
Oscar the Grouch.
I was willing to wear the same clothes 2 or 3 days, and I was willing to, you know, I mean, I was living on somebody's couch, you know. But the worst thing was that my sister-in-law shut my phone.
Yeah. Oscar the Grouch on Sesame Street. He lives in a garbage can, but doesn't he have a cell phone now?
I haven't watched him in a long time.
I'm just saying.
I don't know.
You know,
do you watch them? Are you?
No, see, we don't have the grandbabies here now, so not so much.
Okay.
You know, Jude just wrote in, and she said, when I realized how many birds, the gentle ones who fly through the air, were being killed by cell phone towers, at that moment I let the cell phone go. It's my way to protect the environment. She said, some simply laugh at me, Bob. I'm responsible for me and my actions. She said, sorry, Bob, but I stand on this one. And that's...
I like her.
I love her. She's just got this tremendous spirit-driven sort of conscience that will not be deterred. And she's one of the... Because Jude is one of those people who does hear her conscience. She's not like most Americans who live at the upper range of a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear their conscience at all. And I'd say that about the vast majority of the Horn family.
That's part of why we are the Horn family.
Right. Because we tend to lead with our ethics. Or we see ethics as you know, this goes to your major. We see ethics as a vital part of the whole panorama of the human experience and not some ancillary sidelight.
You know, I'm scared that studying ethics in college courses is going to make it less, studying it and taking tests on ethics is going to make it somehow less powerful.
There's a possibility of that. It's similar to what happens when you go to law school, which you may do someday. After 1 year of law school, what you'll find is that you have stopped seeing human beings around you, and instead you see little walking bundles of rights and duties and obligations. And it takes a while to break that. But you've just got to remain open, and you've got to remain grounded in that very strong center, that very strong core that you have. And don't let yourself be pushed away from it. You know, there are people who were. He's a right-winger now. He complains about liberals in the classroom in academia. He was practically a Marxist lefty radical in the 60s. But he made himself some money, and all of a sudden, everything right-wing made sense to him.
Yeah. That's why I said that in Texas, it's about religion and, you know, conservatism has so much to do with religion. And up here, it's about money.
Yeah, because both of them have a profound means of dulling the senses, to dull the ethical senses, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're looking at my shiny new Bentley. Thank you, Jesus. Or you go to New Jersey or New York and it's, look at my shiny new Bentley. Thank you, Wall Street. Then suddenly the shine on the Bentley takes away everything else. Or maybe you become a sort of proto-Calvinist and you say, well, I have all this because God likes me.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear a lot of that.
Yeah, prosperity gospel.
That's horrible.
It's awful. Well, Cassie, what is a lovely young lady like yourself doing home on Friday night?
Going out in an hour.
Okay, atta girl. All work and no play makes Cassie a dull girl. I mean, I'm just looking out for you.
No, I'm going out. Not to worry.
Yeah, okay. David Horowitz. Patty just wrote in to remind me. Yeah, right-wing nut David Horowitz.
I don't think I know.
Yeah, he's awful. He thinks, I'm sure he hates Princeton. He thinks that young minds are turned into filthy liberals at America's college because they're not teaching conservative mathematics and conservative biology and conservative geology and geography.
You know, they are, actually. They are teaching conservative pretty much everything. You got to go out of your way to find, you know, liberal stuff.
Well, because this guy has been...
You got to work hard at it.
Yeah, this guy's been successful. He's got professors cowed into being afraid to actually teach their material and teach right versus wrong and things like that.
So how do you find out if your professors are funded by Koch brothers? I mean, because remember... story where they were funding all of those professors to teach the right-wing economics?
Oh, yes.
How do you find out who pays your professors?
I don't know. I can't answer that question offhand. Now, I do know that Princeton is the home of a right-wing history think tank.
Yeah.
The James Madison Society?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're real right-wing.
Yeah, but we also have some really good, we've got some good left stuff, too. We've got some good racial and gender equality stuff, and we've got a couple of other foundations here. The one that Melissa Harris-Lacewell taught at before mm-hmm. she became Melissa Harris-Perry, and now she's at Tulane. But when she was...
Did she leave? I thought you were going to have... She bolted.
I was supposed to have her last semester, and she kind of went on the sabbatical and never came back. She ended up at Tulane. So she had people sign up for her course, and then she had other people teach her course for her, and she showed up, like, once every month. And she was, like, the professor over the course, but she was never here.
Yeah, that's celebrity professorship.
Yeah. Yeah. And this, now she's gone completely. But there, you know, there's still other people, and I will be taking some courses through that program, and I'm doing some, that seminar stuff with them, you know, through that. And so, I mean, I'm not going to be somewhere where there's gender and racial equality stuff going on, and I'm not going to be involved somehow.
Right.
What I'd like to see, and you know, maybe I'll be here long enough to help help start something. But
that's what I like
really
to hear.
I really want prisoner equality.
Don't wait around for somebody to start something that needs starting. You start it.
Yeah, you can't start anything until you're a junior. You're not allowed to. I could, but I have to find upperclassmen and work on finding some professors who
would. No, wait till
you can. I wait till I'm a junior.
Wait till you're a junior, and that way you can say I did it.
Yeah.
Well, Cassie, have a wonderful Friday night, dear.
I will, and tell everybody hi.
I think you just did.
Hi. Bye.
Cassie, have a great night. Bye now. She just amazes me. That's our Cassie. At Princeton, Cassie at college. That's her blog, I still... I don't know how much she's writing. I should have asked. CassieAtCollege.com. Just look up Cassie at college. Let's keep things rolling, by all means. Hey, welcome to the program.
I conjured myself. I can do that.
You're good at that. What's up, David?
I have some good news for you.
Yes?
Good news. Good, very good news. News that you'll be happy to hear.
Awesome.
Anthony Bourdain is going to be on the Joe Rogan podcast Sunday.
Oh, neat.
And you will definitely want to listen to it. I just got done listening to one where they were talking about 2012 and New Age and civilizations and DMT experiments. And it was really, really fascinating. And he really challenged his guest and... So, yeah, for people who want to check it out, it's going to be probably, it'll be up on maybe Monday or Tuesday or something like that. And
website?
We'll have them on for like 2 hours. So go to joerogan.net and you'll see it there.
Excellent. Excellent. joerogan.net, just like it
yeah.
sounds.
And
well, I guess it's time for me to try to get him back on the air, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think he's doing interviews because the paperback version of Medium Raw is out.
Well, I think he's going to have to do it because he's probably going to want to plug the layover show as well, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I went, after you mentioned it, I went and read up about it. It's going to be, what, 9, 12 episodes, something like that?
Oh, that's cool. Hopefully a lot of people will check it out and will give Bourdain more ratings that he deserves.
Oh, I hope he I hope they pull down some more Emmys.
Yeah.
Because it's valuable... You know, 30 years ago, it would have been on PBS.
Right. And I think you know the problem is that I like that. You know what, Eric Roberts. I was listening to a podcast with Jay Moore. I recommend everybody check out Jay Moore's podcast. He had Eric Roberts on, and Eric Roberts says the reason why he got so good at what he did in acting was, you'll love this term, Bob. He said he was in a cultural tunnel.
Ooh, meaning?
Basically, he covered himself from wall to wall with cultures from everywhere. If he was to play a character, or he really immersed himself in everything, even when he said, which is crazy to me to think about this. Eric Roberts, he said he was high for 70% of his life. Just mind-boggling, the fact that he could act at that level. Yeah, so that's an interesting one, too, if people want to check that out. That's if you go to smodcast.com, you can check out Jay Moore's podcast. And let me tell you something, Bob. this dovetails right into what I'm sure you're, I promised that I would tell you about, which is, Kevin Smith. Red State is now on video on demand. It's going to be on DVD pretty soon. And I guess I'm going to give you guys a review for it right now. Red State is a very, very hard look into the evangelical fundamentalism like you've never witnessed it ever.
Yeah, I got to sit down this weekend and try to watch it.
It's on the way. Ever before. And let me tell you something. When you watch Michael Madsen, if you don't think Oscar nominee for sure, you're crazy. You're crazy, ladies and gentlemen. Because, Bob, let me tell you something. His preacher is that hellfire and brimstone. And he has that look in his eyes where you know nobody is driving. And it's just, it's wall-to-wall amazing. And the fact, here's the amazing thing about it. The fact that Kevin Smith wrote this in 90 minutes from start to finish, ba-ba-bang, and that was it, no changes, nothing, and then filmed it with the handheld, has John Goodman, Michael Madsen, and the kids in it are just excellent. It's not a movie for everyone because there is going to be an age limit there because of some of the graphic violence. But, wow, what a performance by Madsen, and just some great moments in it. And you'll be spellbound. Like, the 40 minutes, you'll be tensing up. Like, oh, my God, what is going to happen next? And I can't believe that this is Kevin Smith. That's the amazing thing about it. This is the amazing thing about it. When you have a director like Kevin Smith who gets comments and people say about the movie, oh, I don't even like your work. I think you're a douchebag, but this movie is great. I mean, that's like, whoa. And that's what Kevin Smith is doing with his movie. Red State, really an impressive film.
Well, I think you've probably got a lot of people curious right now.
Well, you know, Bob, going back 2 years, I was telling you about this.
Yeah, I know. I remember.
The same thing with Idiocracy. I thought, you know, Kevin Smith, I had my doubts about it. And there's a little issue with the ending. I need to go back and watch it again because I don't know if I'm sold on the ending. And I'm not giving you guys any spoilers. I'm just telling you it's just straight on inspired by what we're seeing in this country regarding religious fundamentalism. And the fact that he made it, the fact that he put it out there, the fact that he put his name on it and said, you know what, I'm not going to do a comedy. This is going to be like a horror reality, gritty drama that you've never seen from me before, ba-ba-ba. And he puts it out there.
Well,
that's like
why,
that.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're watching it in the evening, do you want a you want a good comedy to back it with, just so you don't have nightmares?
You know. Again, I mean, I want to stress this point is the fact that this is probably I'm one of those conservative guys when it comes to people who should watch films, because I think in early ages that stuff can traumatize people and stuff like that. I mean, that's. It may be a false premise that I'm going on, but I look at it as kind of like what my parents taught me or something like. So I would definitely watch out if you have family members in the house who are of a certain age, because there are those. He does such an amazing portrayal of it. And some scenes, Bob, you just they'll be seared to your mind because of the fact that you can.
You know how old my kids are. You know, they're teenagers. Any problems there?
You know, Bob, I don't want to say there's any problems, but there's some scenes in the film. I don't know.
Okay.
There's just some scenes in the film that it's like he makes it so real. That's the thing. The way he puts the camera in, the fact that he shoots it on a handheld. The chase scenes, oh my God. I mean, I'm not giving anything away in this movie, but when you watch it, it's one of those tense, cleanse type movies that, that you watch and you, when you're in the room, you want to be sure that there are people who can handle it. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
But like I said, it's a powerful, powerful message film about religious crazies. And people should definitely check it out if you have, you know, if you have an interest in that. But there is some graphic content. So I will, you know, I mean, but like I said, it's just a, I think it's a watershed moment for Kevin Smith for sure.
Awesome.
And hopefully he does more films like this because it really does showcase his writing ability outside of the comic atmosphere. So yeah, Red State. You guys can check it out on video on demand. I think a lot of different services, pay-per-view. Like I said, the DVD will probably be here in about a month or so. So check that out. And, yeah, Red State. The other thing I wanted to mention, shifting a little bit, was the fact that what we're seeing in the world of politics and what you mentioned about John Boehner is interesting, but I would slightly disagree with you that I think all of those people in Washington, D.C., except maybe Senator Sanders, are all entrapped in that bubble. And they do not understand what poverty is. They don't understand what suffering is for America. And they won't know it until they experience it.
Oh, I won't disagree with you, David, because, you know, here in West Virginia, there are 16 studies out that document step by step how poisonous and pernicious, for instance, mountaintop removal is to the communities that it happens in, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can barely get our elected representatives to even acknowledge that those studies exist. The best we got was, I think, Nick Rahal saying, well, that seems to point out the fact that we need to spend some more time studying the studies.
Yeah.
Jeebus.
I mean...
And I mean, that's just disconnection from reality.
Right. I think, though, that the problems that we are facing right now, we need so much of a hands-on... get your hands dirty approach. And all I see from on the Democratic side on every blog and all of this is if you just call your congressman and you just tell him you want the Jobs Act, and it's insane that's what we're left with now.
I understand that, David, too, because I've you know, I was watching my Twitter feed and stuff today. I was saying, call John Boehner. Tell John Boehner we want job. Blah 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 blah. John Boehner doesn't give a damn. John Boehner cares more about whether his Merlot's California or France, Chilean or Australian than he does about jobs. Because he's not interested. I mean, I just saw this thing come across right now. Where is it? Oh, yeah, over at Think Progress. GOP reps dismiss tax cut for working Americans in favor of giveaways to corporations. Well, surprise me. Of course they do. They don't give a damn.
And that's what we face, this intense amount of gridlock. And the problem is how do we combat that gridlock when we have this many people in opposition and we have so many people in this country, including politicians, who just don't give a damn? And this is one of those floating questions in the air that I don't think will ever be answered.
Well, because maybe it's not being asked in the right place, David. This is just brainstorming.
Right.
Maybe part of the screw-up here is that we spend so much time telling other people to tell somebody else to say something to their congressman. Maybe it's time we stopped asking these right-wing freaks anything.
Mm.
Because ultimately, the right-wing freaks are in office because people put them there. So maybe it's time we go to Phil Gingrey's district and ask, through the media, whatever, ask... You put this person in office. Why did you do that to us? Why do you do this to America? You know, I'd love to see that campaign run in Iowa, where Steve King is his district is.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you sending this creep to Washington, D.C.? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
quit asking the creeps to do uncreepy things. They're creeps. They're going to do creepy things. Don't ask zombies to do normal things. Zombies do zombie things. You see what I'm saying?
I definitely see what you're saying.
Ask the people who are sending the zombies why they're doing it.
I think this is the problem that is going to take a lot of time and a lot of energy, and you know, when you look at all the problems that we're facing right now, what do you put to that's the big problem we face, you know, prioritizing all these problems and deciding, okay, which ones do we put off on the back burner, because everything seems to be, at least the way I look at it now, everything seems to be a priority now because we put it off for so long.
Right, and that's deliberate. Ultimately, yeah, the goal of the Republican Party is to put everything off so long that we just have to look at it and say, well, you know what, we can't fix any of it. We're screwed.
It's definitely something that we're going to have to get more serious about. And before I go, I just want to mention that you ready for a climate story? Huge crabs, more than a meter across, have invaded the Antarctic abyss, wiped out the local wildlife, and now threaten to ruin ecosystems that have evolved over 14 million years. 3 years ago, researchers predicted as the deep waters of the southern oceans warmed, king crabs would invade Antarctica within 100 years. Check this out. But video taken by a remotely operated submersible shows that more than a million have already colonized Palmer Deep, a basin that forms a hollow in the Antarctic Peninsula continental shelf. They are laying waste to the landscape. Video footage taken by the submersible shows how the crabs probe, gash, and puncture delicate sediments with the tips of their long legs. This is likely to alter sediment processes such as the rate at which organic matter is buried, which will affect the diversity of animal communities living in the sediments.
I smell a new reality series. Deadliest Catch, Antarctica.
And maybe something on the, if the crabs are tasty, something for Anthony Bourdain in a submarine.
Right, exactly. In a parka, you know, with penguins around him.
Right, right. But anyways, people, if you want to check out, the movie is called Red State. It's on video on demand. It'll be on DVD very shortly. And it's directed by Kevin Smith and Michael Madsen, and John Goodman star in it. It's
I can't wait.
Well, I'm telling you, Bob, it's a shocker.
It'll happen this weekend.
All right.
All right. Take care, David. Have a great weekend.
Later.
Bye now. Red State. I've been hearing a lot, and David's right. He's the first one to mention it because, you know, he's our pop culture correspondent, and he follows this kind of thing. I have a feeling it's going to be one a lot of us want to watch. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Well, hey, Preston.
Happy Friday to you.
Thank you very kindly, and to you as well.
Always fun to hear the conversation on the front porch.
Just hanging out, passing the jug, you know.
There you go. Red State. I hadn't heard of that one. I'll definitely check that out.
David's mentioned. I'm glad David mentioned it because I'm seeing some responses, and it is it's getting some really, really strong mentions.
Okay.
Not easy to watch.
Okay. It was nice to hear what Cassie's up to as well.
Yeah, doesn't that just charm you?
It does. And that, you know, she got to catch the last mountain there, and that she might bring Bob Kincaid to Princeton. That would be great.
Oh, I'd love to go up there and raise a bit of a ruckus.
Definitely. And I certainly can empathize with her sense of despair in some regards, you know. it can feel, you know, progressive politics can feel so isolating at times.
Well, and we have to remember, Preston, that despair is something that the right wing thrives upon creating.
It is.
They like to create that sense of despair. It's, you know, I was profoundly moved by this this article at Truth Out that I've now mentioned a couple of times. Goodbye to All That, Reflections of a GOP Operative Who Left the Cult. Mike Lofgren is the author again, and he opens it with an exchange between Barbara Stanwyck and Fred McMurray from Double Indemnity, 1944, where Barbara Stanwyck says, "We're both rotten." And Fred McMurray says, "Yeah, only you're a little more rotten."
Okay.
And he makes the point that the Republican Party succeeds beyond its wildest dreams when they get Americans to say, "Well, they're both just bad."
Right.
Because then your tiebreaker is, well, if they're both bad, but that one loves Jesus, well.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the right wing, they're constantly being inspired and encouraged because, you know, they're on the 50,000-watt stations, and they've got their Fox News, and they've got the whole action-adventure genre of films that spreads that kind of jingoism, you know, the hyper-nationalism, the belligerence of that sort of nationalism. So they're kind of, their sentiments are sort of validated all the time, whereas the progressive sentiments, you do have to dig around for it. But once you kind of get a feel for where to look, it's kind of like gathering mushrooms. You kind of learn the spots.
And right.
Find this abundance that is just really encouraging. And it gets to a point where you can't even keep up with the harvest. And documentary films is one place where we're really strong. And actually, a few years back, regarding New Jersey, which, you know, sadly they do have a Chris Christie as their governor, but in some ways it is a blue state. And I've done a little research on New Jersey and kind of its progressive history and some of the progressive souls that are there right now. And just at Princeton, you had that, you know, world-famous socialist Albert Einstein, who was at Princeton. You had Ralph Nader, who, you know, could be accused of making that charge that there are some disturbing similarities between the two major parties. But his arguments are more nuanced than I think they're presented at times.
Well, he did say there is no difference between George Bush and Al Gore, and I mean, he said that.
Yeah.
And
in some ways there weren't, sadly, you know.
Yeah, pretty broad gulf there. But yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And among other things, speaking about progressive in New Jersey, one of the things that I did not mention to Cassie, I hope she's still listening, is that one of the best friends that we have in the effort to stop mountaintop removal just happens to be a member of Congress from New Jersey. His name's Frank Pallone.
Okay.
He's a Democrat. There's a New Jersey Democrat by the name of Rush Holt, whose father or grandfather was governor of West Virginia. He has shown some sparkle from time to time.
Yeah. Back to Al Gore really quickly. He said something the other day about the Obama administration, and I thought, wow, he's starting to sound like Ralph Nader. So... you know,
yeah, I think that precipitated.
That precipitated
a whole bunch of run Al run primary hopes.
Yeah, and I think maybe was that following the decision on smog, maybe.
Yeah, I believe it was.
Or tar sands, possibly.
No, I think it was the smog decision. And let me just mention, Preston, because and I'd love to have your thoughts on it, and anyone else's. I went back, you know, of course we didn't watch the speech live, but I went back and I read the transcript, and there's this line where Obama says that you know, we're not going to back off regulatory schemes. He said, you know, children have a right not to have to breathe mercury or, you know, something like that, but specific mention of mercury. And that was one of those little, you know, kick the furniture moments for me. Because if you reduce particulates from coal-fired power plants in the air, well, one of the things that goes into the air still, even though there's scrubbers, is mercury.
Mm-hmm.
And dissing these air quality standards means more mercury, doesn't it?
Definitely. It sure does. It sure does.
So on the one hand, last night he says we're not going to back off regulatory schemes that reduce mercury, while the week before he had backed off a regulatory scheme that reduces mercury. And that just, you know, that makes my eyeballs rattle like marbles in my head.
And Ralph Nader's eyeballs, too.
And apparently Al Gore's.
Al Gore, yeah. But certainly, you know, I'm certainly not saying they're the same. And I'm glad it was Obama there giving the speech, however flawed it was, and it wasn't, you know, John McCain or whoever.
You know, yeah.
B. Perry.
Like I said, I got that every now and then. I have that little moment where the CBS News special report plays in my head. We take you now live to the White House for the swearing-in of President Sarah Palin following President McCain's death from cancer. You know, suddenly I turn into that Norwegian painting, you know, with my hands on either side of my... You know, just a scream.
Right.
I mean, for all the progressives and all the liberals who say things like, you know, Obama is the same thing as George Bush, or the emailers who send me emails, you know, the in all caps and bold, you know, he's a goddamn fascist, the warmongering, the war should be tried in The Hague.
You know, there's a
that's
lot of
when that, yeah, that's when that loop plays in my head, yeah. Where President Palin, President Palin, President Palin.
Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of oversimplifications going on, and I think even our focus on these individual presidents is problematic. It's much bigger issues than these individuals, whether it's Obama, someone we may like, or Bush, someone who we don't like so much. You know, we're talking about their administrations, we're talking about the massive economic forces that put these administrations in power if they want them there.
Is some of it, Preston, is some of it a failure of understanding of basic civics? Because, you know, there has never been a president from the beginning to the present who has passed a law. A president has never passed a budget. A president has never... Well, the presidency, if you actually study the Constitution, is designed to be considerably weaker than the legislative body, than the Congress. Now, that doesn't stop Republicans from constantly trying to expand the power of the presidency, and I include that all the way back to Abraham Lincoln. You know, he levied troops when he had no right to levy troops.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, state militias were used from Iowa and Minnesota and Illinois and Indiana to fight the earliest battles of the Civil War.
Okay.
Because the United States military wasn't up to snuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they had a commanding general who could no longer get astride a horse in the form of Winfield Scott.
Okay.
And you know, other president, you know, Thomas Jefferson expanded the powers of the presidency with the Louisiana Purchase. You know, there he is carping away for the 4 years of the John Adams administration, talking about how he wanted to restrain federal power, and that then he gets his chance, and the first thing he does is one of the most summary, broad, sweeping expansions of federal power that had thus far been seen, the Louisiana Purchase.
Okay.
So I can't help wondering if just, you know, if it's just a matter of... We know so basically what it takes, what it will take to get this country right, and we know that it's not impossible, and we want to vent our frustrations on the guy who isn't the guy we thought he was in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I don't know if it's an issue of civics and our expansion of federal power or the Senate power or whoever, but, you know, who decided we should privatize the military so much and have, you know, Blackwater agents all over the place.
Yeah.
And privatize prisons. I mean, was that a president or senators? Or I think it was corporate lawyers and lobbyists.
Well, you know what? I know this for a fact because I can remember back when it was going on. I happened to live in a little county in West Virginia back around 1994. When the big to-do was that this little county might get a private prison, and it was going to bring jobs and hotels and blah, 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 blah. And that little county said no.
Oh, wow.
And it's still, no, it was just, no, it's a Republican hotbed. But, you know, no, they just didn't want one of them dirty prisoner people in their community. But that's 1994.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these things develop over time. But, of course, when they get in the hands of money-grubbing Republicans, they get a shot of steroids in the butt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, you know, that article that I mentioned last night in conversation over at opednews.com, talking about that guy who was on the transition team for Barack Obama, was number six on the chain of command. He's the dean of Bolt Hall at Berkeley, explaining that the reason they didn't want to prosecute war criminals from the Bush administration was that they were afraid that there would be a revolt, a coup against the presidency. And, you know, remember, Preston, all the stories about how Dick Cheney left moles inside the federal government?
No.
Well,
sounds like something to do.
You know, little sleeper cells.
Okay.
And so, lo and behold, here, you know, here's Dick Cheney again today on his book tour at the American Enterprise Institute this morning.
Oof.
Where he says, waterboarding, torture. At the American Enterprise Institute, he said torture produced phenomenal results, and of course, the crowd clapped wildly, just like that crowd clapping at Brian Williams mentioning 234 or 264 state-sponsored murders in the state of Texas.
Right.
And the reason, you know, I know Malloy has asked the question, I've asked the question, Rick Smith has asked the question, you know, how is it, because, I mean, it was blatant, it was obvious, Dick Cheney running around admitting that he was a war criminal, as if he was daring someone to do something about it. And now we know why. The Obama administration was afraid of literally a coup if they had pursued him for his war crimes. And so there he is again today, sticking his finger in our eye one more time, and him with no pulse.
You know, and I think, you know, the only thing that can counter, you know, that sort of force in the official politics game, it wouldn't be the Obama administration versus, you know, the further right administration's people. It has to be a popular movement, and that's what the Chileans did. You know, when they were confronted by the Pinochet dictatorship that we helped install, and Milton Friedman helped in the Chicago University Economics School, helped to, you know, put in their shock doctrine forces. And they tortured, and they killed, and they intimidated, but the people kept at it nonviolently. I was listening to Ariel Dorfman, who was a cultural advisor to Allende. And, you know, they wanted to kill him too, but he escaped Chile and came here. He's a professor now at Duke University. And, it was through, popular resistance, grassroots, little grassroots efforts, nothing grand, no grand bills being passed, no great battles. It's little things like organizing lectures and sharing DVDs, or I guess then it would have been video or whatever. Audio cassettes actually have been key to challenging mind control, whether it's the Soviet Union or the Shah in Iran or here in the U.S. You know, we so often we recognize the problems with ABC and CBS and all that and Fox. We do not recognize our power, though. We've got these amazing tools from, you know, the computer, the links, the networking, you know, these independent theaters we have, the independent bookstores we have, countless blogs and magazines. We've got the tools. I feel like we're not pushing them enough. So often, like when I go on my own Facebook page and I see what my friends are posting, it feels like 80% of the time I'm reading something about what Fox News is saying or what Glenn Beck has said and what Bachman has said, and we need to be aware of that, certainly, but I can't tell. I could count on one hand how many times I see a link to Yes Magazine, or the Bob Kincaid Show, you know, or Norman Goldman, or what we're doing. We are, like, giving away so much of our own power.
Oh, give it. No.
I hope we're hyper-focusing on what they're up to all the time.
We are in, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody, anywhere. We are in response mode, and we stay in response mode.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's part of the, maybe that's a problem with the medium itself, Preston. You know, a good example. For a number of years, Guy James and I and Rick Smith went to the annual meeting. It was a big to-do sponsored by the Campaign for America's Future, a magnificent organization, a real live, honest-to-God liberal think tank headed by Bob Borisage, who is a really smart man and a good liberal, decent progressive.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Take Back the American Dream is going to be happening the first week of October. And there's not going to be a Radio Row.
Oh, why not?
Because money is dribbling away. The money's running out.
Okay.
And so, you know, just today I dropped a note saying, you know, I might be in D.C. around that time. If you'd like to, you know, and I'd love to just... stream, if you've got anybody, if you don't have anybody streaming it, I'd love to be there to stream it for you. But, you know, God forbid, and I'm not being mean here. She wrote back and said that they were in negotiations with a certain outfit that has always been represented there and can probably do a better, far better job than I. But when you're doing these things, these big to-dos, with lots of people giving great information all gathered in one place, and the only people who hear it are the people who are well off enough to be there, Preston?
Yeah.
Well, who's going to tweet it?
Yeah.
Who's going to Facebook it?
Yeah.
Because the answer is nobody. Or, I mean, next to nobody. Not enough to really make a dent in the Twittersphere.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
I totally do. It's mostly we're in a circle of the already converted and not thinking in terms of outreach or cross-pollination.
Right. It's preaching to the choir when what you've got to do is turn around and face the congregation. And the congregation is out here in the internet land, and they're watching video and they're listening to audio. You know, and all the times that Guy and I and Rick went there, you know, they had guests that they brought to us on Radio Row. And I kept trying to sit down with them and say, stop, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Don't, you know, the guests are great, but we need to know what's going on in the breakout sessions. That's what people need to hear.
I agree. Including the ditto heads. We really do need to find a way to approach our right-wing family members or friends and just to absorb whatever crazy responses we might get.
Right, but it turns out to be almost, Preston, like NFL blackout rules. You know, if the home team stadium isn't sold out, they won't broadcast the game in the home market because they want butts in seats.
Yeah.
Well, there's almost an attitude like that that obtains with some of these organizations on our side. Well, you know, I mean, if we do that, if we put out live streams, audio and video and stuff, well, people won't come and pay the price of admission to come to the conference. Well, of course they will, because being there is always better than sitting somewhere and watching it. But, you know, it costs a lot of money to go to Washington, D.C. for one of these affairs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? There are ideas that are being put forward at these things that would be incredibly valuable to people, a liberal in Alabama or Tennessee, or a liberal in Indiana, or a liberal in Minnesota, liberals anywhere who can't, you know, good God, liberals in L.A. or Frisco or Seattle or Portland, for whom a trip to Washington, D.C. is almost prohibitively expensive.
Yeah, you're right, you're right. I don't want to leave this conversation completely critical of what's going on because
I don't think we're being critical, Preston.
Yeah, and I've experienced a lot of this stuff, especially I used to do a lot of videotaping of progressive lectures that were taking place either here in Denver or in Boulder, at universities or at churches or union halls, and sometimes I'd run into really frustrating situations where, oh, no, you can't do that, and people, like, insisting on getting no coverage, and I'd just air the shows on cable access TV here in Denver, and I'd network with other cable access stations, like in Philadelphia and stuff, and, you know, we it's such an underutilized resource stuff, like, again, community access TV. And I'd have these situations where people like, well, if you tape it, then they won't come or whatever. And it's like, they're probably going to get 15 people anyway. And, you know, it's, I'm reaching.
The people are going to be there who want to be there.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, that's been one of the beautiful little things, like with our friends down here at Seneca, too. They always call me.
Great.
And they don't
great.
Worry about not having enough people in the hall, because maybe it's because we're West Virginia and it's a long way, and everywhere is a long way from somewhere else. And we understand that, you know, there's value in getting it out to people who can't get there. Maybe we understand that a little better than folks who live in Flatland.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I thought of West Virginia today in a moving way. I got these CDs from something called the Land Institute. And people like Wes Jackson and Wendell Berry has spoken there a couple of times. And I forget the man's name, but he's done a lot of work on environmental restoration and kind of clearing up toxic lakes and working on regenerating soil very quickly. And he had a couple of his students were working on issues of mountaintop removal and doing analyses of what are some of the problems with it. And he said, you know, it was a kind of a sad experience because his students were, in his words, were becoming complete basket cases because the psychological load was so heavy. They were seeing such utter destruction, and he was like, they just kind of didn't have the grounding to deal with it all. And so they shifted from describing the problems to trying to envision the healing.
Yeah.
And among that is a project going on in Wise, West Virginia?
Wise, Virginia.
Okay, Wise, Virginia. And they're trying to implement some of these approaches, sometimes using mushrooms, by the way, to regenerate soil on these areas that have been so devastated. And they're hopeful. And he had this whole, like, five-minute story of, it was nothing but a vision of a West Virginia that wasn't a moonscape any longer, but it was streams flowing again and fish and forests with biodiversity and mushroom gathering and berries. And
that's that is a beautiful vision, and it's something that, Coal River Mountain Watch's motto, Preston, is ending, stop mountaintop removal and rebuild sustainable communities.
Yeah,
and it's the work before us. If we ever get to the stop mountain, when we get to the stop mountaintop removal part, the work before us to rebuild sustainable communities will be heroic, and it will require massive involvement on a WPA CCC level. You know, we could have zero unemployment in Appalachia right now if we ended mountaintop removal and just dedicated ourselves to fixing what the coal companies have already screwed up.
Yeah, stuff like that could have been included. You know, real progressive job speech would have been really pushing environmental restoration, green jobs, wind power, geothermal, tidal power, all that stuff.
But lo and behold, I mentioned that Solyndra outfit in California that went bankrupt last week. I saw a story yesterday. The FBI raided them and started seizing computers and all of that stuff. So given Barack Obama's essential nature, don't plan on hearing a hell of a lot about green jobs or solar power anytime soon.
You know, that story, there again, what gets into the public mind in a big way? You know, what gets rammed into our heads? That story, and it deserved attention. You should talk about it. But just a couple weeks prior to that story of that solar company, we had a solar company here, either I think in Boulder, maybe Fort Collins, that just, they signed a deal with the Chinese, and they've got this technology here in Colorado that's really good, and the Chinese are really interested in, and they're going to collaborate on something, and this company now is worth many millions of dollars more, and they're hiring more people, So that story could have become the big national news, but, you know, it wasn't the sort of story that Limbaugh's going to do a fossil fuel jig over, you know. And
or, well, I mean, I let's remember, I heard the story on NPR radio driving home. So,
yeah.
You know, there's this thing now where, I don't know, call it the nyan-nyan factor. You know, oh, tough, bad day for green jobs today, and went bankrupt, blah, 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 thousands of dollars from the Department of Energy down the drain. You know, and this is an NPR story.
Yeah. Well, the fossil fuel people and right-wingers, the militarists, they've got such media activists, and they're certainly getting into the ear of the NPR people, definitely. But still, NPR, you know, it's still more balanced in a lot of ways. I didn't listen to Science Friday today, but they regularly do programs on recent developments, positive developments in that field. It's coming, even though there's going to be setbacks. It's still, I think, it's going to come. And it's developing. It's not just solar. It's weatherizing homes. That's happening. Green jobs for all. There's a lady named Phaedra Ellis Lampkins.
Yes, I know of her quite well. Yeah.
Amazing.
Unfortunately, green for all. Sorry, I don't mean to be the negative counterpoint
okay.
to every good thing you bring
no,
up,
that's
Preston.
Okay, we need to criticize.
Green for all has a fellow down in southern West Virginia. And, you know, they support him. And he published a screed a couple of weeks back that really, really got a bunch of our backs up.
You're kidding me.
No.
Why?
He declared that the struggle to end mountaintop removal was a divisive failure and that we need to be more willing to collaborate with the coal companies.
Oh, boy.
That's a green for all fellow for you.
Well, I don't think Phaedra would share that sentiment, but that's...
I don't think so either, and you know, a lot of us were trying to get answers. You know, do you even know what this guy just said? Oh, it was awful. His name's Eric Mathis.
Okay.
He came into the movement and went off to work on his project, on his wind project in... in Mingo County, and got himself this fellowship, and then on the day before Judy Bond's birthday, no kidding, published an essay in which he declared that the human rights struggle to end mountaintop removal was a counterproductive failure, and in any plan to bring industrial wind to southern West Virginia hilltops could never happen.
Oh, boy. How disappointing. I know it's clean coal, or so-called clean coal, has been doing, they started running advertisements on the Weather Channel. I thought that a smart media buy, you know,
yeah.
Totally deceitful, but, you know, they're very strategic, and you know, and they try to wrap their coal chunks in red, white, and blue imagery.
Oh, yes.
What a deception. NRDC has been great, and I just got their most recent issue of On Earth magazine. And
isn't that wonderful?
It is the cover story, Plundering America to Fuel China's Boom.
Well, you know, there was a story that came out today that I found just disturbing as hell. I guess there's been some statistical analysis, and it doesn't look like the kind of statistical analysis that's partisan funded, like by the coal industry.
Okay.
But it's an analysis that says, because for a long time, the argument may be a part of it, because
yeah.
it's so energy intensive. It's like these stupid tar sands. You've got to burn tons of that. You've got to burn oodles of cubic yards of natural gas in order to heat this stuff up enough to keep it from just being sludge. But there's craziness going on in the world today. I got a newspaper story from a guy, a listener in Arkansas, about the fact that his county is now, there was a news, he just sent me a screenshot from the newspaper, touting the glories of lignite excavation in his county in Arkansas. Lignite, Preston. That's basically carboniferous mud.
Okay.
And they're gonna, and you know, it'll bring jobs to, And the way they're going to bring jobs is to strip that county.
You know, and here in Colorado, I think a big push for uranium, and we've got the gas wells all over the place. I think it's like 9 million gallons of water for a typical well, which they turn into poisonous sewage.
They then really can't do anything with. Oh, by the way, David in Tennessee asked me to tell you that Ira did a fine job today on a number of topics on Science Friday.
Oh, good. I missed it today, but I'm glad to hear that.
And Betsy sent along a story based on what you mentioned, uranium. Navajo woman helps prompt uranium mine cleanup. It comes from, I think, the Houston Chronicle. I'll see here in just a second. Cron.com. Yeah, Houston Chronicle. Stretch of Monument Valley, Utah. Elsie May Begay's the woman's name. A mesa stained with a gray streak where uranium was mined decades ago. It's been a source of tragedy. She spent 30 years living among residue piles that her children slid down when they were younger. Contaminated waste went down the nearby arroyo or was kicked up by high winds, and it's being cleaned up now. The U.S. EPA is wrapping up a $7.5 million project that's getting rid of the stuff and getting it away from human habitation, and it's largely as a result of her single-minded, dedicated determination to see it happen.
Amazing. You know, stories like that, we should know these people's names at least as well as we know Sarah Palin's. We should know the tar sands protests at least as well as we know the Tea Party stuff and on and on like that. Winona LaDuke.
Judy Bonds.
I saw the CNN bit on coal, and I saw your criticisms and the criticisms from other people, and I thought they were right spot on. At the same time, there were some bits of the CNN presentation that I thought were good. Maria Ganeau was in it,
yeah,
making a few wise comments for sure, and that it was presented at all. I mean, so many people were utterly unaware of that this is going on at all. There was imagery of stuff getting, you know, sacred places getting blown up. I think that upset a lot of people at some level. And it wasn't completely rationalized away as, well, you gotta have these jobs. There were other voices. There was that lawyer who's been doing such great work.
Joe Lovett.
Yeah. So it had its decent moments too. It was better than I had.
It did, and I don't know, maybe we shouldn't have expected quite so much from CNN. But the one thing that we did do a lot of is, you know, we said, you know, you got to come back and tell the other side of the story, because they told the story from the perspective of that poor downtrodden coal miner who's poisoning people for a living.
Right, right. And, you know, it didn't present the alternative vision of how that poor downtrodden miner could be, you know,
working in a nice, pristine, could eat off the floors. Solar panel or wind turbine manufacturer. Oh, yes, I know.
Yeah. He could be leading, you know, nature walks and, you know, rafting on the rivers. And
yeah, I mean, it was along about the time that all this was going on that I noted that we had aggressively courted Cabela's to come here and create some $7.50 an hour jobs. But I remain unaware of the West Virginia Office of Economic Development ever courting a single solar panel factory or a single manufacturer of wind turbines to come here. Because see, those would be $16 and $17 and $20 and $25 an hour jobs.
Yeah, and I remember Cabela's from David K. Johnston's, one of his books on the, I think, free lunch maybe.
Yeah, and also the book
Perfectly Legal.
Yeah, but there was another book by another author that was profound, and it pointed out, it focused on the Cabela's Bass Pro Shop model of race to the bottom, tax bidding. Oh, what was that called? It's a real sleazy thing that they do, the way they determine where they're going to set up their stores.
Okay.
So whenever possible, when I need that kind of thing, you know, I go to I go through or to Gander Mountain because they do not operate on that model, or at least they didn't.
I've got a. Do you know REI?
Oh, I love them too, and Patagonia as well.
Yeah.
I just can't afford Patagonia.
Yeah. I'll only go there if there's a sale. That's for sure.
But they've got great stuff.
They do. And real quickly, New Jersey. They've got some great stuff going on there. I created this whole list on Amazon. You know how you can like make a list of favorite books or something?
Right.
I made this list called Progressive New Jersey. And it talks, I mentioned the alternative music coming out of there. You know, spirits like Einstein, but also, you know, Nader went to Princeton. There's
Bruce Springsteen is not exactly a conservative.
Yeah. There's New Jersey Peace Action. There's Jersey Shore Nuclear Watch, New Jersey Environmental Center. Cassie mentioned Princeton Green Club. There's Cornell West at Princeton. Lester Brown graduated from Rutgers. That's from Princeton. Chris Hedges was a distinguished fellow at Princeton
yes.
for a while. I think he's at University of Toronto now. Other figures, Eugene Jarecki, the director of Why We Fight. He trained as a stage director at Princeton. Lauryn Hill, Miss Education of Lauryn Hill. She was born in South Orange. Let's see, Patti Smith, where was she from? Woodbury, New Jersey. See, and I bring this up because so often we're hearing it's a conservative country. They're always putting that in our head. That is not true. Alice Waters, the food revolutionary.
Yes.
She was born in Chatham, New Jersey. Edward Said got his degree from Princeton.
And what a brilliant man he was.
Yeah, and I'm making a list like this for every single state, essentially, and having an easy time finding these progressive spirits from some from the.
They're there. I mean, I imagine, you know, when you get to Alabama, you're not going to have a hard time. You'll find it in Mississippi. But again, that issue of perception, Preston, says, well, you know, there ain't none of them in Alabama. That's just conservative. That's just a red state.
It's the socialist Helen Keller, Alabama.
There you go.
That's right. And, yeah, to counter, this battle over perceptions is so key. And something to keep in mind regarding elections, and you'll always hear about what a landslide Reagan won in. Only half of the potential voters are registered to vote, and typically, even in the presidential elections, only about half the people who are registered actually vote.
So ultimately, and then when you break that down by primaries, you wind up with 15% or less of possible voters choosing the people who run for office.
Exactly.
And yet somehow we blame other, and there's blame to go around. But, you know, there's a hell of a lot to be said for get out of your seat and feet on the street.
Yep. You know, that's why Acorn was so important.
That's why they had to go.
That's right. That's why there's this war on cannabis that's disenfranchised hundreds of thousands of people, especially African Americans who typically vote like 90% Democrat.
Yep.
You know, a lot of the people who aren't registered, they're not only liberal-leaning, they're more like social democratic-leaning.
Yeah.
And going after the third-party people, let's look at all these 50 million, 60
yeah, and
million,
let's,
70
and let's,
million people.
Right. I mean, let's bring them into the process. You bring all those people into the Democratic Party, the DLC doesn't have a damn chance.
There you go.
And it can be the party we want it to be. Preston, this has been a wonderful conversation. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, my friend.
Yeah, my pleasure as always, Bob, and good night and peace to everybody.
All right, thanks. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's the Horn's resident optimist. That's Preston calling from Denver. I always love our conversations. Back to the phones in just a second, if you're still there. I hope you are. I got a note on Facebook from Kim in Lansing, Michigan, because we got a little tiny dot on the map not far from here called Lansing. I didn't want anybody being confused. No, we don't have any listeners in Lansing, West Virginia. I've been living in Lansing, West Virginia. Hi, Bob. I really enjoy listening to you. I'm understanding and agreeing with your points over the coal industry and exploring other energy options. I recently bought a GM Volt, and I'm really liking it, feeling good about myself. but I also know that coal is behind my electric here in Lansing, Michigan. So what are your thoughts on myself trying to use less fossil fuel? You know, taking a step is so critical. There's an old Latin proverb that I had to learn a million years ago that translates as, for fear of failing, he did nothing. Well, Kim, you've done something. You've disconnected yourself from a significant chunk of the hydrocarbon industry. So now, look at your local power cooperative and see if you can buy credits for wind power. And you know, take that volt and drive around and tell your elected representatives that you want. You know, you've got a great senator in Debbie Stabenow. She knows what mountaintop removal is doing. Get after her. And just help spread the word. Help be part of the solution. That's anything you do is being part of the solution. You can always join Coal River Mountain Watch. That's being part of the solution. You're plugging in, but less than half of the electricity in America is produced by coal. We are making progress. So don't beat yourself up too bad, okay? Don't beat yourself up at all, because your heart's in the right place. You hear your conscience. You're not like so many other Americans. And, of course, that's what separates the rest of the Horn family from so much of America. We have consciences that are sometimes louder than is even comfortable for us. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Mark.
Hey, Mark, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Bob, and I appreciate you taking my call. I was going to say you had the young lady from Princeton called earlier.
And, Cassie, yes.
I realize it's not a phone company per se with their own towers, but Credo is kind of a pro-environment, pro-labor.
Oh, they're, yes, they are great.
And on their latest ad, Bob, they had a phone featured, a picture of a phone. With, on the screen of the phone was, I believe, a mountaintop removal. It was a non-coal message there, and I started to take a picture of it and send it to you, but I misplaced it. It's in the latest Nation, and I thought, what a good combination all those are. But,
Credo is a very good company. I mean, they really, really do walk the walk, and AT&T and Verizon are god-awful.
That's correct.
And just so people will know that I didn't just default to one of these companies, we use our cell phones in applications regarding the Horn. I went to Credo and I said, you know, I want, but no, they don't have service here. So, you know,
you should. I'm wondering, Bob, if they couldn't do something with the Horn in the other direction. I know they're two worlds circling independent of each other, but I think there's a mix there with the Horn and Credo. At least they advertise for you or something, but or vice versa. I think there's a connection there. Bob, I know your show's getting ready to wrap up, but I also wanted to say I overheard you say about Gingrey, the atrocious dentist from South Georgia. About 10 years ago, I was on a construction job in lower Alabama at Lamb Farley and rebuilt the cooling towers. Any case, one of the guys on the job, his wife is one of Gingrey's secretaries. I said, you realize who your wife works for? And he was very defensive of the guy. Now, the carpenter that I was working with, this is a union, fellow union person, I don't think he'd ran into really like a real union person, so I plumbed him up. He's a good sized guy, and over time, I don't know if it was just me or the pressure I was able to put on him through other union members. We don't see him around anymore, so if I ran him out of the union and he's listening, we know that he isn't. I'm glad that he's gone. Then, as far as 9/11 is concerned, Mike Levine has a radio show who I served with in Argentina. He was the DEA agent there, and it's called Expert Witness Radio. It's on Mondays. He also defends a lot of victims that get shot by police that shouldn't be shot. And I talked to Mike right after 9/11, and if any of the listeners to your show have any suspicion about 9/11, this man worked for the federal government for 30 years and was also one of the most decorated DEA agents. He was a New York City Drug Task Force commander and shot in the line of duty. His son was also killed as the New York City police sergeant who I had taught to play basketball in Argentina to the best of my ability. But in any case, expertwitnessradio.org. And I thank you for what you do, Bob. I think mercury and pollution is way more dangerous to us than terrorism. And I educate the people I work with about what you're involved with.
Thank you, Mark. You know, you say that and you remind me of the story that hateful woman from Oklahoma, Sally Kearns. She announced again today that homosexuality is more dangerous than terrorism. And I can't help thinking, Mark, that as long as a significant portion of our culture thinks that way, we've got a mighty bumpy ride ahead of us.
Last night when I got off work from the power plant, Bob, I drove over to Orlando. I came into the hotel and got on an elevator, and I had my work clothes on. I'm a good-sized guy. The guy in the elevator, I immediately knew he wasn't American, but he looked very pro-Western in his appearance. In any case, as the doors closed, I could tell he didn't really want me on there because I was kind of dirty from work. And I said, and I don't mean to sound mean, I said, "What are you?" That's how I talk to people when I want to. And he said he was Brazilian, and I said, "Well, you're in my country." That's what I told him. I said, "You're in my country." I was checking his attitude. And he said, "I really like your country." And I said, "I really like Lula da Silva from Brazil." And he said, "I like our president more." And I said, "Well, I'm a Marxist, and I'm from Illinois, and the United States does have Marxists. I'm one of them." And it didn't shake him at all. So they have a Marxist running a very successful country called Brazil.
That's the absolute truth.
Yeah, I put it on people wherever I go. Every time I pump gas, I say, "This gas is expensive." You'd think George Bush was still president. Every time I see a stupid veteran in a red light, I pull up and I ask them, "Have you figured out what the war in Iraq's about?" None of them gave me the answer. And all these anti-government people are all retired Air Force, which is about like working for the post office, but safer. Have a good night, Bob.
Take care, Mark. Have a great weekend. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
Mark calling from Florida, and thus we come to a close. You know, I should never say something like, "We're doing well in fundraising," because the minute I say that, stuff stops happening. we're not anymore, but thank you for the one donation this evening. It was very much appreciated. We'll be back Monday. I've got doctor's appointments Monday morning and Monday afternoon. I will do everything in my power to hustle back here. It's my understanding Rick Smith is not going tonight, so you may just get the rerun of tonight's show immediately after this show ends. Weather issues, I think I saw his producer Brett said. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, from our chat room moderators, Sparky and Lottie, to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy. You didn't want sneezed on, did you? A special note. It's been kind of like waiting for the second Boston album, but our good buddy Reverbo, our op-ed correspondent, has posted the fifth and final installment in Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy at headonradionetwork.com. Go read it. It's like nothing you've ever read. Reverbo is a brilliant writer.